How come you didn't tell me?
Tell you what?
That you knew karate.
You never ask.
Yeah, well, where'd you learn it from?
Father.
Well, here's something I learned from my father. How to ramble endlessly on about nothing to perfect strangers.
I don't know anything.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Air Raid Podcast. Thanks for downloading the show, or however you're hearing us now. This is episode 50.
Woo!
In what is now, in what can now be officially considered a long and drawn out series, part of the Noisebeam Network at noisebeam.com, N-O-I-Z-B-E-A-M. I'm your host, Aaron Roden. Of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Oh yeah, man, we have got a fantastic show planned for you today.
It's gonna hurt a lot of it.
Mr. John Richards, host of the morning show on KEXP, is going to be joining us shortly. I am super excited to pick this guy's brain. This guy is incredible at what he does. I would call him the unofficial king of radio. Maybe the official. I don't know how he sees himself. I'm not too sure on that. So we'll have to hear from him. But he's going to be stopping by Dining Room Studios here in the beautiful Greenwood neighborhood of Seattle a little bit later. And we'll be bringing you all that good stuff in just a moment. But first, the reason I went with a Karate Kid cut at the beginning of this show is because I have some striking similarities now to Mr. Miyagi, the karate master, the teacher in Karate Kid. I just caught a fly with my bare hands.
Woo!
With one hand, not two, one. I caught a fly with my bare hands.
Man who catch fly with chopsticks.
Amazing, right? You're amazed. I can tell. The silence in your voice says that that you're amazed at what I just told you. I caught a fly. I had to chase it around for about probably 45 minutes. And that's what my life has become now. Since I'm still on paternity leave to hang out with my beautiful little daughter, that's what I do. I chase flies around the house and try to catch them with my bare hands. And yes, I know what you're asking now. I did wash my hands. We've been having a great time off of work, hanging out with the daughter. It's been awesome. Today, the weather is amazing today. We're recording this on Friday. The weather's only supposed to get better here in the Seattle area throughout the weekend. Things are looking up, man. Things are looking up. But yeah, back to this whole Karate Kid thing. Just listening to that intro right there before we started the show made me think of something. And it made me think of Mr. Miyagi had this whole little thing worked out, you know, where he told Daniel's son that you know, if he washed all of his cars and sanded down his deck and stuff like that, then he'd teach him karate. I'm just wondering if I will ever get to a point where maybe somebody wants to learn how to podcast or anything. I'm not saying that I'm any good at this. Let's stop the train right there. Okay, stop the train. Here we go. Back it up. And I'm not saying I'm any good at this or ever will be. But if anybody thinks I'm good at it, can I make them wash my car, clean out the garage, maybe install some siding that some woodpeckers have destroyed? All in promise, with the promise of teaching them how to podcast. Wouldn't that be great? Oh man, what a racket! What a racket Mr. Miyagi had on teaching Danielson karate. You know how much stuff he got done around the house with Danielson working there for him? A ton. I mean, that guy had a shit ton of cars, right? He had so many cars in there. Oh man, I think that's that somewhere down the line, this is going to be a possibility for me. I'm hoping if I can keep it up. We're getting close to 1 year anniversary, people. Two more shows until we get to the 1 year anniversary of the Air Raid podcast. We want to thank everybody really quick for listening and downloading the show and things of that nature. We also want to urge you guys to go to Stitcher Radio, the great app for your smartphone, and give us a thumbs up whenever you're listening to the show on there. And also just go to Stitcher and listen to the show. It's an amazing app, kind of like Pandora radio for podcasts. And it's really cool. Also, go to iTunes, give us a quick star rating. You know, even if you don't like the show, give us a star rating, tell us what you think, give us a review, and, you know, all that. Boy, I got tons of plugs that I need to do here. Go to noisebeam.com, check out our show there. And also, you can stream the show from that Noisebeam site, which is rad. Anyway, let's get to this. We've got we have got a email from a listener on the Facebook page, which you can go to as well, and be part of the. The Air Raid throngs on our Facebook page there. But we got, let's see. Oh, now I can't even find it. See, this is an ongoing thing that is happening here with this show. And I don't know if I like this, where I'm going with this, because I am constantly ill prepared for this thing. But yeah, okay. So we got an email from Mr. Scott Rollins, new listener Scott Rollins, from let's see, Atlanta, Georgia. Right on. I wonder how he found out about the show. I'm not really sure. Seems like a super cool guy though, Mr. Scott. Thank you so much for listening in Atlanta. Make sure you spread the word. But we got a little Facebook message from him. Recently, because I was talking about, last weekend, or during this week, we took Tatum for her first, little road trip to, my parents' hometown, and just loaded up everything. I mean, we had so much stuff loaded in the car. It was ridiculous. And now I can understand why people have vans, you know, minivans and stuff like that, and bigger cars with their kids. I'm not saying that I'm ever going to get a bigger car, because I don't think I could handle it, paying that much for gasoline and things of that nature, you know? But yeah, we just had, everything was just totally packed into the car. And so I posted that up there, and Scott wrote on the Facebook page because he had listened to a recent episode of ours where I was talking about this was in our last episode where I was talking about how I am trying not to swear as much in front of my child. Although I do know that the child, you know, Tatum is so little right now. She's not gathering any of that information yet. She's not remembering the F word and when I say shit. You know, but Scott had a great idea. He says this: if you're worried about swearing in front of little T.O., which stands for Tatum Olivia, very good memory, Scott. Try to come up with a safe expletive, because it feels so good to swear. You're so right. You are so right, Mr. Rawlings. He said, we used pickles for a while. And so my wife and I have been trying that on for size. We've been using pickles in place of saying the F word, which now I say like pickles every other sentence. It's ridiculous. He also had this to say about lying around your kids, because that's another thing that I'm trying, you know, not to do to my daughter is lie to her. But he says, and don't worry about lying around your kids. Daddies lie all the time, particularly to prevent a meltdown. It's really easy in the days before they have long-term memories. Oh, sure, we'll get a toy on the way out after we do some shopping. Haha. Good one, Scott. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the show. So yeah, so those are some things that I'm working on, and I'm getting some good feedback, and some good what's the word? Oh my gosh! See, I said gosh instead of God. I'm working on it. Pickles.
Oh no, Kelly Clarkson.
Anyway, yeah, getting some good advice from you, the listener out there. So we are today in episode 50, we're going to be featuring music, by this awesome band, which you may remember if you go through the back catalogs of the Air Raid podcast, Cannon Canyon, are this podcast's like flagship band, man. I love these guys so much. Their music is great. They've got a new album coming out. It's unnamed. It's not available yet, but it will be, and we'll be sure to make sure that you guys, know when that album's going to come out because, it's really good stuff, and you should definitely check these guys out on Facebook. They also have a Twitter account. They're going to be actually on episode 51 as well, so check that out, and we actually may be playing one of these songs again next week, so I hope that doesn't bother any of you. But it's really, really good stuff, so hopefully you guys will enjoy it. We're just going to be playing one song off of their new album, and then we're featuring music from the band Grand Archives, who were nice enough. Actually, Sub Pop was nice enough to allow us to play that stuff. So first, we're going to go with Cannon Canyon at this first musical break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Mr. John Richards of KXP, John in the Morning. Can you believe it? This is going to be great. I am super nervous. Holy shit. I mean pickles. Holy pickles, man. I am super nervous for this guy to come over. I hope my place is clean enough. It's a good thing we don't have cats anymore because it's been a lot easier to clean up without them here. And it doesn't smell like kitty litter in the hallway anymore, which is great. Okay, this is the song The All You Get by Cannon Canyon off their new unreleased album. You've heard it here first on the Air Raid podcast. And when we come back, we'll have Mr. John Richards, John in the Morning, KXP. We'll be back in a moment. We are back. Joined with me today, episode 50 of the Air Raid podcast, Mr. John Richards of the morning show at KXP. How's it going, my man?
Good. 50. That's impressive.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, you. I think you came under the impression that we had been going for a little bit longer. I totally tricked you into this.
I thought this was like number 5, actually.
Right.
No, I pride myself in being involved with things that, you know, are very amateur and haven't even done anything.
Whoa, amateur?
50 is impressive.
Amateur?
No.
Come on, man.
If you hear the pounding on the during the sound, that is my son playing a ninja game on my iPad.
I actually want to take that thing from him right now and play it myself.
Yeah, and
maybe
it,
you and Arlie can do the show.
Well, it's the greatest babysitter I ever paid for. I mean, it seemed expensive, but when you add up the babysitting hours, it's actually averaged out really well.
Yeah. And you came and it, you have one of those little Zag keyboard things for the iPad.
I do.
And I think I was the first one to inform you that MC Hammer himself invented that keyboard.
I had trouble coming to terms with that.
Yeah. Because I watch a lot of Oprah.
Yeah. You must be sad then.
I get off early.
She's done.
Yeah. No, I'm not, actually. I think she was probably one of the problems with America. Because
wow.
Yeah,
with America.
I don't know. Man, not that bad. Not that bad.
All right.
But she, you know, she just always had this thing, like, I think I soured on her. I had a friend over in Ellensburg when I was in college that got lost up on Snoqualmie Pass.
Right.
And actually, they thought he was dead. And they found him, I think it was like a day and a half or 2 days later.
Yeah.
And he was sitting on a snowbank about 500 yards away from I-90. They had to amputate his legs.
My God.
And so he goes on this show, right, on Oprah.
Uh-huh.
And he's got prosthetic legs that he can run in and stuff. I mean, prosthetics are getting way cool.
Right.
You know, by the way.
Well, so if you maybe people choosing to get them now. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
you
want to
be half cyborg? It can be done.
Okay.
For the right price. But he goes on the show, and they had a bunch of people on Oprah that day that were that had like natural accidents. You know, one girl had gotten bit by a shark and everything like that. So he's backstage, and Oprah, you know, kind of is walking down the hall, and of course she's a busy woman.
Sure, she's Oprah.
But the producer said, hey, this is so and so. And she just kind of, yeah, whatever. And she brushes past him. And then once he comes out on stage, she gets up and she has this, like, you know, look on her face, like, oh, you poor thing, and, like, helps him across the stage. You know, mind you, he doesn't need any help anymore. He's been in prosthetics for a while. And so it's just this big, big show. And that's when I soured on Oprah.
That's when you got the inside scoop. Yeah.
And that's why I bought the Zag keyboard. Developed by MC Hammer.
MC Hammer. Did he develop it or did he invest in it?
I don't know.
And he had
no money.
We
were talking about this before.
Yeah, to invest. So money. I thought about that when you told me that off the mic. Yeah. You said, well, he probably invested in it. With what? Goodwill? His
did
wardrobe?
His wardrobe, yeah.
His handlers?
He sold all of his parachute pants.
He is the greatest behind the music story ever.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
He's got, well, I mean, the whole story where he has, you know, 200 people in his staff. He's got family, friends. Everyone's come around him. He gives everybody
money. This was during the time that
during
he
the
was,
heyday,
like,
right. And okay, then it starts to go downhill. Gone. They're gone.
Oh,
everyone's
yeah,
gone.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
money, nothing. They're out of there. Everyone spent their money. He's broke.
Yeah. Well, invest. He had that huge house, too. Like, I always remember seeing, like, pictures of that giant house that he had with, like, MC or, you know, MCH or whatever and a hammer. There was probably a sickle in there. I don't know. He could have been. That was the year of the Soviets.
He makes a fantastic product for my iPad. I'll tell you that right now. I drink my 50 cent vitamin water, and then I have my MC Hammer, and then I get a George Foreman grill out and have dinner. It's nice.
And you're sponsored by all three.
I am. Did you manage, see how I managed to get all
those
in there?
Totally. Very good, sir.
Thank you.
You've been doing this for a while.
I have.
Yeah.
At a non-commercial radio station, no less.
So. Yeah, yeah. .org.
.org.
Yeah. So let's get into this a little bit, John.
Mm-hmm.
Where did your love of music start?
It's when I was a kid. Good answer. he's right. When I was a kid, he just blurted out.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. I think I realized looking back, it was a lot was just listening to the radio just nonstop. I grew up in Iowa, and we would just sit and listen to the radio all the time. And it, you know, sounds like olden days listening to the radio, but we're talking the 70s here, late 70s.
Right.
It wasn't like, you know, ELO was coming on. It wasn't like, you know.
It wasn't on the Vitrola.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. But I liked it, and I realized looking back that I liked it a lot. And then my love of music for what I listen to now or what I started to listen to was living in Spokane. We lived in Spokane, Washington, and I wasn't a big fan of living in Spokane, Washington. some are, and I don't want to offend anybody, but a lot of us didn't enjoy our experience. We're talking formative years, man. We're talking 10 to 20 years
old. Okay, okay.
So I'm listening to really, really bad music.
Wait, how did you make the move from Iowa to Spokane, Washington?
Well, there was a divorce in Iowa.
Okay.
Get this. So you're in Iowa. You're in the center of the country.
Right.
My parents get divorced. My dad goes to Florida. And
he goes to Spokane City. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So he knows we're going up to Spokane. Now, the furthest you can get away from us is Florida. So what does he do?
Man.
He buys a convertible Mustang, loads up the car, and heads to Florida.
Oh,
we
okay.
go to freaking Spokane, Washington. So we get to Spokane. Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
And not even the Palm Springs. You didn't even go to Yakima.
Yeah. No. No. Glorious. Glorious country. But I went
we
to
have some listeners over there. So,
I love Yakima. It's a beautiful country. Great one. So we distilled in the basements of my friends. Right. It's better in Pasco. We went to Spokane and, you know, I was there and I was just, you know, doing my thing, whatever, growing up and,
yeah.
And struggling like people do growing up and kind of realizing I'm not a big fan of the city. And my brother, my big brother, he's like 5 years older than me, went down to Phoenix. Okay. He started sending me tapes. And I liked music. I liked every kind of music. I'd listen to the radio. I'd win radio contests just by sheer volume of listening to the radio. Yeah. I just couldn't lose. The first thing I won were Wang Chung tickets. And I,
Wang Chung.
I didn't actually Wang Chung that night, but I won that.
We can get into that later.
Sure, I got a good story there. But anyway, so I'm listening to bad music, but then really my love, I think loving it and being passionate about it is different than just survival.
Right, right.
And it was when my brother started sending me tapes from Phoenix. They had a great station down there, KAKQ, I think it was, down in Phoenix, and it wasn't around a long time.
Now, is this a stepbrother or something?
Like, an older brother, brother. Okay. He moved down. He was, like I said, he was much older than me. So I'm 14. He's, like, you know, 18 or whatever.
Right, right.
And he sends me these tapes, and the first tapes I get are, like, Pixies and Bauhaus and Cure and just all in one tape, right? Pixies' first record, or it was on cassette. And it was one of those moments. I can say it changed my life. I mean, it's what I do today because of that moment. I opened up the package and I put the tape in. I'm like, what the hell, man? This has changed everything. And
just
you couldn't
blowing
hear
your mind.
Yeah, you couldn't get online. Yeah. You couldn't listen to music
right?
So absolutely blew my mind. Changed everything. Everything stopped. Got a hold of my brother, got on the phone. Like, oh my God, man. I'm moving to Phoenix. It's great. He's like, no, whatever you do, don't come down to Phoenix. No, he it's hot down here. Started going to the record stores and he would just get me more tapes. Well, I just started listening nonstop, and then once you know that exists, you start finding like-minded individuals, you start spreading it to your friends. I have a very close group of friends to this day who grew up with me there, still music lovers, and I found this record store in Spokane called 4,000 Holes, which I think just closed, unfortunately, but it was around for years. It saved my life, man. Found this little radio station in Spokane, KAGU, which is now Classical, which sucks, but it was like, you know, 100 watts or whatever, and it would play crazy music and you could get it in just in certain parts of the city. In my buddy's house, we'd go over to the house and listen to it and literally had the coat hanger out the window to get the signal. Sort of like stealing wireless now to hear internet broadcast. But that was when it really kicked in. I was like 14 and music, I'd been listening to the radio and stuff, but then it all came together with actual like good revolutionary independent music. And it was over. It just was like, okay.
So what was
on.
This? This was late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, would have been 87 probably.
Okay, so 88. grunge in the Seattle area was just starting to come around.
Right.
Had one of the most formidable bands that were just starting and getting bigger, Queensryche.
Of course. Yeah. Well, Heart had laid the foundation.
Heart had laid the foundation.
Queensryche moved in and took what Heart had built.
That was such a bad joke. I'm going to add a drum roll.
That'll be good.
Or a rim shot.
You should anytime you say Queensryche.
Yeah. So this is just around the era where like Pixies and Breeders and all those types of bands are kind of starting to gain traction.
Well, and it's funny, you know, bringing my brother up again. So we're getting into this music and he decides to move to Seattle. I'm still in Spokane. Okay. He moves up there in the late 80s. Right after Phoenix, he goes up. He goes, oh my God, it's even better here.
Right.
And it's 300 miles from where you're living. So he sends me another tape. What do I get? I get Nirvana and I get Mudhoney in my first round. I believe so, yeah. And Big Mouth, whatever.
Right. They're for Mudhoney's first.
Thank you.
The
most greatest records of all time.
I can't
say.
What it is.
And it was Touch Me, I'm Sick, that much I know.
That
again, another step forward, like, oh my God. And then you had the Pearl Jam record come out, and then you had Nevermind come out. And then it became, okay, then these bands started coming over to Spokane. And I went to a show. I went to the Met in Spokane. Again, my five friends. We think we're alone in the world
there.
And it's Screaming Trees and Love Battery. And we go to the show. I dyed my hair red that night, but
good.
I didn't want to be permanent. So we went with Kool-Aid and food dye because that was awesome. And then I got my torn jeans with my long johns underneath. Yeah. My hard labor out in the yard certainly didn't do it. So I tore the jeans and I go to the show and, again, life-changing experience.
Right.
First time I'd ever seen anyone stage dive. First time I saw anyone carried on a crowd. And within 5 minutes of being there, man, I was looking at my buddies. I remember this moment like it was yesterday. And I looked at my friends like, I'm going up. And it was,
yeah.
I mean, that's like someone jumping out of a plane or someone talking in public for the first time or just some big event in their life. And I remember the boost of my friends, very symbolic, up into the air and being carried on the crowd, jumping off the stage. And it wasn't just about that. The music was amazing. Love Battery is amazing to this day. They've been, I actually just saw Ron the other day, which is so weird that now I know this guy.
Right.
Great guy. Yeah. And I just talked to one of the Screaming Trees members too.
Mark,
I don't know how much I can talk. You know, he doesn't talk. you can't look him in the eye. You can't talk
right,
to him.
Yeah.
Barrett actually got a hold of me about this unreleased Screaming Trees album, but I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about, but there is one. And
really,
I'm hoping to debut it. Anyway, so weird world, right?
Yeah.
So here I am talking to this guy about their record. So I see the show, I dive all the place, we get done, and first off, a goddamn bloody mess everywhere you look because my red hair has shot everywhere. It looked like someone had opened fire and blood. So everyone's covered in my red food dye, but no one knew it was me because it all come out by then. So
yeah.
It was good.
So
number
you just
one.
Say you just sweat it out.
It flew because I had long hair and I was flying around. It's swinging everywhere. I mean, my God. So that was the number one thing that was funny. And then two, I remember it was right out of a John Cusack movie. We're all sitting outside the Gas and Sip.
Right. Yeah,
in this
course,
case, the 7-Eleven, the one close to where we are right now for that movie. And we're sitting there and we're drinking big gulps or whatever, and we're just like, can't talk. We're just shaking our head. Our ears are ringing. We're sweating.
Yeah, yeah.
Just covered. And like our shirts are just plastered, after a show and red. And we just can't believe it. And then I remember thinking in my head, this isn't far from us. What are we doing here? And then I got the hell out of there. So that's
so what? How old were you when that happened then?
That show would have been, I don't know, like 17 or 18, maybe.
Okay, you moved over to Seattle.
I stayed a bit because I had a girlfriend over there, and like an idiot, stayed there because she was still in high school.
She cute?
She was a ballerina. Very nice.
That's worth it.
Yeah.
That's worth it.
Yeah. She was one of those people who, when I was over there too, I was so out of it, not trying in society at all at this point. Like, this music that, and this totally popular girl and like cute and started dating me for some reason. I have no idea to this day. I still thank her. I thanked her recently. Like, hey, thanks for saving my life.
Send her a Facebook message.
It was literally like that.
Thank you
right?
so much.
Yeah. And then it turns out she's dating the guy I went to class with in the same class. It's weird. But I don't like to think too long about that. Yeah. So we, she's very nice. So that ended, which is good. She should have broke up with me. Total idiot. And
anybody who dyes their hair with Kool-Aid.
Right.
You know,
and I would have, that would have been my first
total time. Winner.
Right. Exactly. And I decided, that's the, I was kind of the last thing keeping me here.
Right.
Or there. And so I got in the car. I remember I had a 68 Mustang maroon. God, I love that car. And hopped in the car and moved in with my brother over in Seattle. And,
oh, cool.
And that was when commercial radio was still decent here.
Yeah,
So I listened to KCMU, and I listened to The End when it was, again, playing good music. And
right. I remember when that station started, they did a whole day. They played Mudhoney and Screaming Trees and Alice in Chains and Nirvana and Soundgarden and everything. And they didn't even have any commercial breaks for the first day that they were running. And we had found this station, me and my friend Kelly Dickerson, just on happenstance. And all throughout the day, they were saying, "The end is coming.
The end is near.
The end is near. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
So nobody knew what the hell it was.
Right.
And it was just the greatest thing ever because it was playing the music that we had listened to.
And that was a new concept in radio in a format. Now it's so in every market. But at the time it wasn't. And they had a lot more freedom of programming then.
Mm-hmm,
and commercial stations actually had, the DJs had some freedom to play some things.
Why is that? Is that
why
FCC
is it then? Or why is it now?
Why was it then? Why is it different than it is now?
Well, there was more of an independent spirit, and the corporations hadn't completely come up with a formula yet.
Right. Was this more of like some young people that wanted to start a station, and then the bigger wigs were just kind of like, all right, whatever.
Sorta,
we'll see how it goes.
If you look at the guys who were involved, these were old. I don't say old, but they weren't that old at the time. I just mean they'd been in radio in some of the KJET, some of the other stations.
Okay.
They had guys like Bill Reed were there, and I'm blanking on.
Not Bob Rivers, right?
No. Norman B.
A
few others. And these guys, but what they were very, they knew how to program music. They'd have history in it. So you're hiring guys who know how to program. the thing is that kept happening. There are plenty of DJs I know to program, and that slowly got taken away from them.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
it became a formula, and now there's very little. In prime time, there's zero choice for DJs at commercial stations that I know of.
Right.
And in the evening, and sometimes you still have a little freedom, but it's pretty consolidated. So at the time when I came over and heard that and heard KCMU at the time, and
yeah.
you know, one was a little too freeform for me, so I couldn't keep track of everything, but I still liked it. And the other one was a little too commercial, but you know, you could find stuff in each of them on literally each end of the dial.
You could jump back and forth.
Yeah, it was cool. So I was in a radio station from Spokane. Oh, and the other thing was GU went classical when I was there. I was like, okay, even my station here has anything to do with me anymore.
Right,
so
right.
So everything was like, get over to Seattle.
Yeah.
And it was good to be here.
And you've been here ever since?
I have, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 15 years.
That's pretty amazing. I still remember...
17,
you know,
18 year? Jesus, sorry. I've been here a long time.
God, you're old. You're so old.
I'm so old.
Arlie, your dad is really old.
Dude, I am so old. That's when you say, no, I'm not.
I'm not too old.
That's right. I'm not too old.
I still remember, and that it's got to be the same for everybody who's a music lover, too, because the first show that you ever go to...
Right.
I mean, you always going to remember that. I remember the first kind of like garage rock show that I ever went to was Gas Huffer at Zoo in Bremerton.
Yeah, they sing Train to Spokane.
Yeah, oh man. I loved that band.
Yeah.
And I actually just recently bought some old vinyl of theirs too.
Yeah.
Just amazing stuff. But I'll always remember that.
My first Very show, fun. Though, actually wasn't that Met show. That was my second. My first show, or maybe third. My first show was Jane's Addiction.
What? That was your first show?
Yeah, that was a very early show. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they were touring with Mary's Danish and saw that show. And
wait,
I was
Mary's Danish? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, yeah. It was.
Who the hell are they?
You don't know.
I have no idea.
They're one of those. They're a cool band. They're old school.
It's like when I say Alice Donut, nobody knows who the hell I'm talking
same,
about.
Same, kind of the same thing. There's people who love them.
Right.
People who,
yeah.
everyone else has never heard of them.
Yeah.
And like Perubu, right? Like I saw them open for
Pixies.
I don't
even know who that is either.
It's an acquired taste, but I'll get a request for that once a month, right?
Right.
Of all
right.
three of those bands you just mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was very early and I just did, again, it was off a tape. I heard Jane's Addiction with my brother because I was into the Stones. I was into classic rock a little bit, but they did that cover of Rock and Roll and they did a cover of Sympathy for the Devil. And I thought, well, this band's got to be pretty good. And I went there. I was scared for my life. I mean, it was crazy. The people were there. And that was the day I also learned you can buy anything out of the trunk of a car. I get out of the car.
Oh, yeah.
I could buy tickets. I could buy shirts that weren't sanctioned, a bag of weed, whatever. It was all right there.
A shotgun, maybe?
Anything was available.
Totally.
And I'm
going
to pass that on to my little one. Anything you may need, my son, you can find in the trunk of a car at a concert. Heavy metal parking
lot. That's totally true. Heavy metal parking lot. Yeah, totally. Yep. Totally. And that's kind of a natural progression, too, is like kind of getting into the classic rock. I remember I was way into Hendrix.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of...
Hendrix
phase. Everybody
Beatles
goes
phase.
Through, yes, the Beatles phase.
Doors phase is a tough one.
Doors is kind of tough to get into and then get out of.
Yeah, it's kind of gets
because
you sucked
that
into.
One is the one that can turn you into kind of like this weird jam band fan.
Totally,
you know.
Yeah.
So that's the one
you know,
that
like
you have
18
to...
minutes of Riders on the Storm. Like, yeah, this is
right.
so awesome.
Yeah.
You know, this would be better if I were hot.
It's
totally
like, let's
high.
Go to a string cheese incident. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
And then you're like, this would if I have never done drugs, but I feel like drugs would be important to enjoy this more. And then you could go. It's a gateway.
That's a gateway to Pink Floyd.
And then
you're done.
Yeah.
And then you're done. Once you become a Pink Floyd fan, you're screwed.
It's hard to come back.
You're pickles.
It's hard to let that go. And then you're at a dead show eating bologna sandwiches.
Right.
Sucking
bologna sandwiches.
Out of a balloon. I mean,
right, right. Doing bong hits out of somebody's weird, smelly
out of the trunk
gas
of a car,
mask.
I'm telling you.
In somebody's trunk. Yeah, totally. So how did you get into the radio business then? How did that come out? So you're in Seattle. You're about 18 years old.
Yeah.
You're falling in love with every band that you come across.
Yep.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then how do you make the move to work at it? Then it was KCMU.
Yeah. I started going to the UW. You know, I was going to shows I could go to and listening to music and just doing my thing and trying to, you know, get by and go to school. So I went to the UW and I was in the communications department. I didn't know what I want to do. I always liked to write. I knew that. And I was like, I want to write. I like politics, I like history. I don't know what I want to do. And it never occurred to me radio yet. And so I went there and I was in the communications program, and one day they came in and you know, it was like a 100 level class or whatever. It was like 4,000 people in the class and getting nothing out of it. But they said they're cutting the program. They're going to, UW's had to cut some things. And I remember them saying it wasn't, they were going to cut across all, like a little bit from everything, like across the lawn. They're going to cut a limb off. I remember them that specifically. And I thought, like, we're the arm and it's just being cut off to save money. So they don't have to cut all the other departments.
Right, right.
And I thought, this isn't good. And at the time, too, I had fractured my ankle playing Ultimate, and
so you were listening to Pink Floyd in the Doors.
I was playing Ultimate. No, Ultimate. Don't get me started on Ultimate. That's my only legacy at the UW. I started their club. I started the Ultimate.
Hey,
it's a very athletic sport.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
It's not freestyle. Which I started. No. So I hobble over to. So I wasn't working. That's my point. Like I couldn't. So I actually had crutches, and I go over. I remember going across campus. Very. It was a day like today, and went over there and said, "What do I do?" To my advisor. Like,
right.
What do I do? They said, well, you know what? If you're into communications, WSU has a great program. That's where you need to go. Like, I just spent 10 years getting the hell out of there,
going
man.
Back.
Pullman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
close to Spokane.
Yeah, it's very close. It's just like a college version of Spokane. No, thank you. And so I hobbled. And I had, in my head, I'd been listening to a lot of KCMU lately. I thought, I'm just going to go there. I think I should just get involved in that. And I, for whatever reason that day, hobbled over and went up there. Knocked on the door, and I think I'm the only person who's ever knocked on KCMU's door, because they just walk in, right? And this guy, Patrick Cohen, I remember him to this day. He was a guy, volunteered like a ton of hours, and I just came in. I said, hey, man, he's looking at this guy. He's getting ready to leave. I'm on these crutches. I said, look, and they just cut the communications program. I love this station. I love what you guys are doing. I will volunteer, and this is the magic words, anytime, I'll do anything, volunteer. It was all volunteer, but whatever. I don't care. And
done.
I said, I'm going to keep coming back here until you let me do something. And he just looked at me and said, you ever do production? I said, nope. He said, okay, sounds good.
It sounds great.
I said, can I start now?
Because they can mold you.
Yeah. And I said, I have 40 hours available to you. And he said, we don't have 40 hours, dude. It's like, okay, I'll come back tomorrow. I said, okay, if you come back tomorrow. So I remember my ride to pick me up didn't show up that day. And I was so excited that I was on my crutches, and I actually had to go about a mile on these things through the U district. And I remember not really caring until I realized my armpits were so painfully just ready
just
to explode.
Totally
chafed. Been on crutches. It was so bad. But I remember getting home. I was just so excited. So I went back the next day and they gave me chalk, razor blade, and some reel to reel. I said, have fun, right? So I went to this room.
Wait, what? What is this for?
Chalk,
I don't
razor
see,
blade,
I'm not, I,
and then I did a line
computer.
Of coke, and it was great. No, yeah. And I said, this is radio. No, they gave me the razor because you cut back then.
Okay.
This is just to the tail end of it. It was starting to get
right.
But you would just cut and splice. You'd make the mark in the thing and where the where
so
you
you'd make the mark
edit,
with the chalk.
Then you tape it. You'd use a special tape. That's how you edited stuff then. And so you'd go through the reel-to-reel, which is a good lesson, because once we started doing digitally and doing that, it actually gave you a real good appreciation of it. And
I guess I didn't really realize that radio did the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did production spots and did all
That's
kinds
so
of like
weird.
So I didn't know what I was doing, right? But it was cool. I started to get creative and started to just never leave. And then one day, sitting there doing this in this freezing cold room, it was connected to the booth. KCMU is very small. Yeah. And I'm watching this DJ. She's nuts. She's just jumping around and putting music in and screaming and yelling and just having a great time. And it hit me like the tape my brother gave me.
Right.
That's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. That I'm doing that.
Yeah.
But I was smart, and all interns should know this, and volunteers. You don't just jump up and say, I'm going to go. I want a radio show where I want whatever the grail is. And I just said, I'm just going to stick around here until something good happens. And one day, an overnight shift opened up, and Don, who's our music director, he called me, and he just said, hey, I got a shift. You know, I just was always there.
Right.
He's got a shift for you. You want it? I said, yeah, I take it. Oh, my God, this is great. And I hung up the phone. I remember my girlfriend at the time. She was like, oh, my God, this is so great. What is it? I said, I didn't ask, actually. Hold on. So I called him back. He was so excited. And he goes, 1 to 6 a.m. every Friday morning. I'm like, awesome. And I hang up like, it's 1 to 6 a.m. Oh, God. I'm going to have to rearrange my schedule.
What the hell did I just do?
No, but I didn't care. And it was and it was right after my my favorite DJ at the time and to this day, Riz Rollins. So DJ Riz was on before me.
Okay.
And it was my hero. And
He's been there a long time.
He's been there.
I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he's been there over 20 years, something like that.
Wow.
And Riz actually was the officiant at my wedding recently. He actually was a guy who married us. I mean, we go way back.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Amazing
nice.
To go that full circle. And this guy, Michael D, was on after me, and great guy, who eventually went down to Portland, and I got his shift. But I was on between those guys for a year, and nobody, either in the overnight, so it was weird. Like, people didn't really know what you were doing. But these two guys, they heard me, and they really liked what they heard, and they kept going to Don. At that point, Don didn't even know who the hell I was anymore. It's like, once you got on the overnight, it's like, yeah, whatever. And they just said, if anything opens up, this is your guy. Then when Michael left, he said, you got to give this guy a shot. And I'd been a year into doing the overnight, and it was, you know, wearing on me a little, but just a busy schedule and going to class and stuff. And I I just started doing
You're
that.
Still going to school at this point.
Yeah, intermittently. I learned right away I'd
Were
rather
you put
be.
On academic probation?
I needed the student loans. I'm not going to lie to you. I was living off the student loans, doing the case music thing, playing a lot of Frisbee. And then, you know, me and my brother going to shows, and it was a good time, man. It was a good time in my life. That it was, you look back and it was a struggle, but it was a good struggle because I was building something without knowing I was building it. You don't know at the time, but it was, I never in my wildest dreams thought that would be a job. I just, I kind of did. In the back of my mind, I kind of knew, like, maybe this is something I want to do. But guys would go there and be like, I want a show, and I want, because I want to get into radio. I want to work in radio. What they're implying is I want to go somewhere else. I want to get a real job. And I remember thinking I was one of the few people there who didn't want to go anywhere else.
Right. You wanted to stay at
I
want to
program
station.
Music.
Right.
Yeah, I knew right away that this had a lot of freedom, and I liked the ability to program and have a connection to listeners, because these guys would call me in the middle of the night. I remember the Ernst, which is now closed. Freight crew guys. And I used to do freight crew over in Spokane, so I could appreciate being up all night too. And they'd
it's
be
a free popcorn,
that.
Man.
I don't even want. We broke so many laws when we were doing the open. I don't even want to talk about it. But Albertsons will find me and sue me. But I remember thinking, like, I remember getting this call and having that connection with them, and I thought couldn't do this at another station. So I remember not wanting to leave.
Where everything else is planned out for you already. You have a certain.
And I didn't know that. That's how they
stuff
did it.
That
but
you
I
can pick from.
Yeah, I kind of sensed that was how it went over there.
Right. So at this time, KCMU is still a college station.
Well, I mean, it stopped being it stopped being a college station about 1980, really.
Okay.
I mean, it is licensed to the UW. We have a great relationship with them.
You probably get interns from the communications department.
We don't as much, but it's funny you bring it up because we have we have this new management agreement and we just renewed it and just yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago was approved and it's going to be a better situation so we can get exactly that because should, right? Yeah. And there was a disconnect because what happened was they stopped funding the station back in the early 80s and so to keep it alive, they went public. And nonprofit, instead of a student staff, they started just having volunteers, and there'd be some students like me who would obviously volunteer, but they had to do fund drives and get grants and all this other stuff to pay for it. And it's been public for, I said, like 80, 81, 82, something like that. So not really. KOW is the same way. They're both licensed to the University of Washington.
Right.
And your KCRWs and the Currents of the World, those are licensed to colleges as well. That's the only way you can do it.
So still love the job then. I mean, when you talk about this, the look on your face says, I am the luckiest man on the planet.
Yeah, it is. It's a mix of being in the right place at the right time. And I heard this a long time ago. It was in a movie, The Kid Stays in the Picture. There's a great film about the guy who produced like The Godfather and all these other things. And they said he was the luckiest guy alive. And he said, what I was I was always prepared for luck. And I always thought about that because I worked really hard and I never left. And I lived off student loans and I worked odd jobs and I took any shift I could get. And when people wouldn't show up to shifts, they would turn the station off. I would go up there and turn it back on.
Right.
And go up there. I remember post party once, like I went to this party, I was a little out of it. You know, I was just like, had a few and I was like, I'm going up there and turn the station back on. I got the engineer to do it and did shows like that. And I just really believed in it and thought it could be something else. And so I just spent all my time and energy there and going into, debt and not going to class and really, like living it, and I couldn't. I just loved it. Nothing else really mattered to me, but that really ultimately. So to build that, I've grown up with it, obviously, right? I've been at it for 15 years, and it's grown with me, and I made a career out of it, and I, manage all the DJs now and make a lot of the decisions there, and involved with membership and just so many things, and it's become such a. I'm defined by it, which is good and bad. And it's a 24-hour day job.
I can imagine.
300 emails probably a day and all kinds of, the public stuff.
But 250 of them were mine.
Yes, reminding me to come here today, which is good. It took my wife going, hey, didn't you have that thing? Like, oh, you're right. Perfect.
Best podcast in the world.
That's right.
Let's see. Let's go to musical break here. We were lucky enough to get the go-ahead from Sub Pop to play some Grand Archives. They have been absolutely great to work with. That song that you heard when we came on, that was Cannon Canyon, The All You Get, from their new album that is not out yet. I even beat KEXP to this, to the punch.
Did
so,
you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. but we're going to...
I've been playing Grand Archives for like 5 years, dude.
yeah, whatever. Yeah, you're so special. Come on. Grand Archives.
I interned at Sub Pop.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit here in just a second. So we're going to go with some Grand Archives. This is off of one of their older EPs. This is a free EP that you can get at grandarchives.com. It's called Hey Hey Heart Attack. And we'll be back with John Richards in just a moment. Back. That was Grand Archives with Hey Hey Heart Attack. You can download that for free at grandarchives.com. You could probably, shoot John an email at john@kxp.org and request that song.
You could, and I'd play it.
On the radio,
great
too.
Great
at,
band.
At like 5:30 in the morning. How are you still awake right now, my friend?
I get up at 4, and show starts at 6, but I have to get there by no later than 5. But like 4:30 is what I shoot for.
Yeah.
It's a long day.
Does it, I mean, you've been doing this shift for a long time now, right? You've had John in the morning.
Yeah. It's been a decade of this. So,
really?
So all the years I've been growing up and, mm-hmm. and having this one with me as well, a little more.
Right.
It's hard, you know, I mean, it's a hard thing. I love what I do. And if you didn't love what you do, you couldn't get up that early. If I had to get up and go to my old jobs I had in college, you know, I wouldn't get up this early, but it's your whole life has to adjust to it. My family's had to adjust to it. My friends, you know, we got to get to bed by 8 or 9 at the latest. Because you get to bed by 9, you can get 7 hours. And I'm a guy who needs like 7 hours, and you have to schedule naps.
7 hours, dude. I need like 10.
Average I read is 7.9. That is what you truly need, and there's a bell curve, right? So some people need 9.
I always thought it was like an even number, so it was like 6 or something like that.
It was like 7.9. So it averages out. So you could be at the 7.2 or you could be at the 8.6, whatever it is.
Right.
So I think I'm at about 7.5, really. So I actually keep track now of my sleep. It's actually been very, very smart because I realize how far behind. Like last week was like 12 hours behind.
Well, you guys were doing... Was that partly because of the hood-to-hood challenge that you guys just did?
It's a number of things. It's the workload there is pretty heavy. We do like... you know, 10 jobs each. It's a nonprofit. So it's like,
there's
a group of us that are the main people there, and we just do a lot of stuff. So some weeks are really heavy, and you're working from home, you're working from the station, whatever it might be. So it can be long days, but so those tight days are tough.
Yeah.
But I try to have a day a week where I can nap a little bit in the middle of the day and catch up, like a Wednesday, like right in the middle.
Yeah.
And I've been better about diet and exercise and hydration. I mean, seriously, to get up that early, I'm not kidding here. I'm a total hippie, but you have to adjust your entire diet and the way you sleep and the way you exercise, and you can live that way, but it's not, it gets harder every year. You know?
Right.
I'm not gonna lie to you.
Do you ever think you'll change time slots?
Morning. The morning is where you want to be. I mean this in the least cocky way. You put your best DJ on in the morning, and I've always wanted to be the best at what I do, and that's how it started a little bit. Like, this is where you put like your guy on, like, or your girl or whoever. Like,
yeah, because people are listening to it as they're going to work.
And you set the table for the rest of the day. But then it was okay, and I got out of the ego part of it a long time ago, which is was great. That's a bad road to go down, by the way, and we can talk about that, but it's a bit, you know, I figured it out. I got a lesson in it, a few lessons in it, and I decided, okay, this is not what I'm doing this for. And I got into the whole idea of the most fragile time is the morning, the most like dedicated you'll be to a radio show or what you're listening to or the foreground, right? Not background, is the morning. You're setting the table. And that to me became, and I can do more of a moody start to my show. I do a very moody first hour, very ambient, you know, and I can do that early and sort of set the thing. If I had to do just 4 hours of the same kind of tone, I think I'd go crazy. So it's nice to be able to just start people's day.
And I notice that because I'm up that early as well. Yeah. And I listen to your show in the morning and, you got this good. You know,
it's a build.
You got it worked
slow
out,
build,
man.
I do. And it's natural really because some days it'll be like a Friday. A lot of Fridays will be like, at this, I'm going for it.
Yeah.
Wake up, arcade fire, boom, you know, and it's Friday. But on a Monday, never are you going to do that, right? And that's why it's beautiful to be able to program.
Yeah.
It's important to program yourself and know how to do it, but you need to program for the people.
Yeah.
Like if you program for yourself, then you're going to scare everybody away, and it becomes this, you know, free form has to be somewhat, you know, I have to look at it and figure out, okay, that's good, but we're in that form, but how do we make it for the listeners? And at 6 a.m., I don't want the McCluskey, and I don't want the Big Black, and I don't want the whatever else loud band you want to reference.
Big
six,
business be the first, the
boom.
First band that you
play. Right, gas
offer,
6 a.m.,
yeah, right.
Boom, and not for me. So, and apparently not for the others, because there's a lot of feedback on the show. So, it sets it up,
totally.
And then by 9, then it's rocking out. I feel like people are up and moving around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right, buddy. This one, going to school at 8:30.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Perfect. So you hit on something that I wanted to talk about a little bit too, is that you do definitely have to program to the people. And I feel like KXP does that really, really well.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that has made you guys what you are today.
Yeah.
So is that something that you and everybody else kind of figured out on their own? Because, I mean, you know, I hesitate to say this because it sounds condescending, but it is kind of, it seems like KXP was formed from kind of this ragtag group of DJs.
No, I that's fair.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I, yeah.
And so, I mean, is this something that you guys kind of all knew because you were, one, you're music fans.
Yeah.
Two, you're good at just talking with people and finding out what people like, right? Or is this something that you all kind of learned in school?
We never sit down and have that kind of conversation because we never did. Now known that that's what we're doing.
Right.
And I think what happened was through the years going from KCMU and then through KEXP and these becoming our jobs as well, and the sort of the people who were doing that, and they tended to be the ones building the station as well, the ones who were programming more for the listeners. And there were great DJs at KCMU who were all programming really well. But I think they kind of were in it for different reasons. And it was more of some of them were like, look what I can do kind of programming. And that's cool. There's a place for that for sure. And some people do that really well. But for us, it was like, I think the people who really were interested in building an audience through loyalty to the music, not compromising to build an audience, because we could easily just go AAA and play, you know, Jack Johnson and Dave Matthews or whatever. I'm not getting down on them. There's a place for that, but it's not for us, right? Like that will attract listeners because those are very popular artists.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a balance there. Like, what can we program that's forward thinking, takes risks, but have some kind of structure and do it for the people? Like, how do we do this? And you do it not through ratings, really. It's through membership. It's through emails, people, calls coming in. It's just people committed to the station. Because, I mean, if you go by ratings, we're going to get killed because we're not as big as the other stations. Yeah, and we never will be. So, I mean, online, we're huge, but, you know.
So, what you're doing then is you're basically getting the listeners be part of the radio station.
Yeah, they are. And that's that, you know, when people talk about KXP, they talk about the community and almost... Some people think like it was a plan, like we're going to get a KXP community. It is so organic and so natural that that happened that you're not buying another game, by the way, Arlie. No, put that down.
Close the iTunes store.
Yeah, no, go to a game. He's already asking for games. It was so natural. It just happened and it made sense and people became members, and the community just grew, and they identified themselves as KXP listeners.
Right.
We didn't identify them as a group. They identified themselves, and pretty soon we realized we had to lead this thing, and it became even more about programming for the people and figuring out what they wanted to hear.
Yeah. So at what point did you guys sit back and go, holy pickles.
Yeah.
Good job. This is becoming a really big thing, because KXP, in my mind anyway, I'm sure that you feel the same way about it since you're there every day, but KXP has become very influential in the music realm, and not only here in Seattle but around the rest of the United States and the rest of the world.
Yeah, a lot of people even in Seattle aren't totally aware of this, but it's one of the most listened to online stations in the world. The most listened to public station, the most listened to music station. Huge online, especially, and always been big here in Seattle, and it is considered radio wise the most influential music station. I've been told this by many people who seem to know what they're talking about. I feel that way, Kevin Cole and I, we work and we lead the programming department. And 10 years ago, when we switched over to KXP, we really saw that as an opportunity. We had an infrastructure suddenly. We had a generous donation from Vulcan and Paul Allen, and that got us a new space and an infrastructure when we had zero. And we thought, what are we going to do with this? Like, what are we going to do? And that's when it really hit. Like, we need to get to more people. That's what we need to do. We just need to get out to more people and be that radio station that's influential and get music to people who can't hear it. Liberate them.
Is that when you guys took the avenue of like online streaming then?
Yeah, that's when we started to stream more. We streamed a little before that, but we really focused on that. We focused on really making our on the dial better and just everything we were doing to do better. And it sort of hit us a couple years into that, what was happening. Like, it was really starting to hit. The membership was just unbelievable, tenfold. It just kept growing exponentially. It just kept growing and growing. And the online response, growing. People in Seattle starting to get it, and really good retention, and just that things were starting to build, and it was all from just a ragtag group of people who got together and were really trying to do something important in radio and really say, it became this, it's funny, it was this like, we're programming music, then it became, we're trying to save radio here. The radio's been taken from us, and it's been... Yeah. Corporations taken it over, and they've consolidated all your choices, and it's terrible. Terrible music's being played, and commercials 20 minutes an hour at least. DJs who have skills are being stripped of their skills and just are tools in there that have to play what they're told
or
to play.
Or it's pre-recorded.
It's pre-recorded, and one guy's doing 10 stations, right? He isn't even in Seattle, so it became a thing where we were starting to change again, and then you see more growth because here we are now championing radio. Now it becomes bigger. And then it became even about our city. Like, well, what are we doing with Seattle? And what are we doing with our Seattle community? And it just grew and grew and grew. And
What was the feeling behind that then? I mean, was it just like,
it was a perfect storm of people. Yeah. It was.
Was it a gradual thing, or was
it was
it
a
just
gradual thing?
All at once?
It was totally gradual. We came close to not being a station anymore when we transitioned to KXP. It was. Uh-huh. It saved us, and we. Moving and being independent, and then having the right people in there. Having Tom Mara came in as our executive director. Old school KCMU guy came back. He had moved away.
Right,
came
I remember back. Hearing about that. Yeah.
He's an amazing dude. He without his leadership, we'd be in trouble. And he had very forward thinking, great at relationships. So we worked with UW, we worked with Vulcan, and then we had Kevin and me and Cheryl and Derek and Riz and just all these DJs who. Don, the best music director in radio and our secret weapon, really. And we all just worked together. And we finally, after all the work of not really being appreciated or paid or really any a lot of recognition or whatever, right, that you were doing a good job, it all started to happen. And we'd been doing that for a while, and it just so we just got more confident, and we saw that we were having finally, you work at something long enough and, you know, things happen, and we stuck to it. The same people, when we transitioned to KXP, not one DJ left. Mm-hmm. They all saw the beauty of that and what could happen. And then we all had this idea of what we really wanted our station to be. And we had the ability to do that with some seed money and 3 years to build an infrastructure. If we didn't, we wouldn't survive.
And a lot of blood, sweat, and tears goes into that little tiny... You guys are... Every time I drive past your station, I'm just like, my God, how does that
you
thing
should
work?
Come in here
because
in there.
I want to.
It
I've
is. I'm not kidding.
To go
you come in anytime. I'll give you a tour because I love giving a tour because when we moved in, palace. My God, what are we going to do with
that
this space?
It was just so
this
much
is,
different.
Than... Oh, my God. We got a parking lot here. We got... Yeah. More than one room. I mean, the bar was low. Casey Me was tiny. It was charming, but charming. You've all lived in charming apartments.
Oh, yeah.
Means a
means
pickle 400, hole.
Yeah, pickle hole.
And
yeah,
very good. So we now have like 40, I don't know, maybe full-time employees in there.
Uh-huh.
And like 50 DJs part-time and full-time and about 1,000 volunteers. So we the closets that were there hold two or three people. Now the hall they do three different closets were transformed. Our entire web team are in former closets, and I hope the web team comes out of the closet soon. And then we
rim shot.
And then we have a hallway that that was just hallway, just like it's blank hallway. Now it is home to like 10 interns. We have laptops lined up. We have, and it's just unbelievable. It's everyone shares an office. There's nobody with our office to themselves. I don't I don't, and no one else does. We're all just,
Now you have this big, there's this like big condo right on one side of your place too. Does that interrupt like the antenna at all?
No, not at all. Cause our antenna's on First Hill. It's up on.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I thought it was on top of the building.
No, there is one on there, though.
Oh, okay.
And there's still one on the communications building that still, I believe, transmits about 10 watts of our station.
10 watts.
About. Does that go like I learned that the hard way.
Block?
It goes the campus when it first started. It was
really?
Campus, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I thought we were off the air totally when our transmitter went down.
Yeah.
No. Turns out I was joking around.
Uh-huh.
Luckily, I wasn't swearing, but I was joking around and just playing. Just
And
randomly.
It was going out there.
And I got a couple calls. They're like, dude, we can hear you. Where? That's how I found out. I'm writing a book about this. It was unbelievable. But it doesn't really affect us too much, the people around us. It's just the space itself, which is really starting to affect us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
But you guys are going to be making a move here pretty soon.
We are. This has been a long process too. We know we had to move. So what we got was a lease from Paul Allen. It was $1 a year. That's pretty good.
Wow.
And it was very generous. Yeah, it was unbelievably generous to not pay rent basically.
That's
for
at 10 the building
years.
That you guys are at right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. Dexter and Denny and and that ran out. And they were cool and they gave us an extension. We pay rent now. It's super cheap though, but it's still it affects the budget and it is rent.
Right.
And we should be paying it. And we have like a 2-year extension.
Okay.
So we're like, we got to get out of here. We have no choice here. We have to build. Even if we had a 10-year extension, we got to go.
Yeah.
There's so much more we could be doing with our web team, with our in studios, with our community, and just our staff. It's just, we need to go somewhere. So when the Fun Forest opened up at the Seattle Center, again, Tom Mara, our executive director, saw that as a real opportunity for the station, which really kind of threw a few of us off. Like, what? We thought like Center was good, and we thought some of the new developments down in kind of close to us, down in South Lake Union, those kind of places.
Right, like the Gates Foundation.
Which is I just got a tour of it. It's beautiful.
Oh my God, amazing building.
I got to go before it was built. My buddy runs a construction company, and he took me and my son, and we got to go while they were building it. Coolest ever to go through that construction site was so immense, and to see it done was amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So
it's a crazy building.
And lots going on down there. So we thought there was all these space. So anyway, long story short, we put a proposal together in record time. Amazing people behind the station.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is not just the station growing, but our advisory board, our governing board.
Did you get some architects to donate their time?
Oh, absolutely. We got Scott Redman, Lori Noto. These are like Scott runs Selling Construction. Lori Noto does architecture. And we had these kind of people coming in and giving – I don't know how they had the time, but they loved the station, started giving us their time. So we all just busted ass. And again, we had amazing KXP employees working to the midnights and put together this proposal. And, you know, Chihuly was going for the same space and some other people and everything.
Yeah.
We never had a problem with Chihuly. Other people did. We just wanted to apply. And it was good for us. It was a good exercise.
Yeah,
it sped this up. Whereas, you know, any company and a nonprofit as well can take some time doing this. So it sped things up. we went to the proposal, and you know, it was going to be really expensive to go there, but it turned out Julie got the space, and what happened after that was a great support from our mayor and our city council to move into the Northwest rooms.
Yeah.
And the mayor was way behind it. His press conference, you know, was amazing. You know, they announced the Chihuly thing and there was like 80% KEXP. And it was, you have to think about how far we've come from what I told you earlier the mayor standing up there and saying KEXP is an ambassador of this city, which we all know.
Yeah.
And if you're a listener, you know, if you're a member, you know, if you're a DJ there or whatever, you know. But the mayor of your city saying that, how many cities are you in where guys standing up saying, this radio station is an ambassador and an amazing resource for our community. We have to support it.
Right, right.
And
yeah.
So...
God, that's got to be an amazing feeling.
It was unbelievable. It was like, and I think we've lost... Sometimes you lose perspective or you're so in this and you know you're doing great work and it's important,
but
to see that people get that we're exporting Seattle to the entire world and embracing our community at the same time is an amazing feeling. And so he went to the council and they have been great. And there's some final approvals and stuff, but everything looks good there. And I've been in the meetings, a lot of these meetings. If you ever wonder, like, so if we're going to move into a space, we have had more community meetings about this. We're wide open to this. What we want to do is make something just like on the air, something you've never seen before in radio, a building that you've never experienced before when it comes to radio. It's not even a radio station. It is a community resource. It is a building that will give you pride to be in the Seattle Center.
Yeah.
Now, that alone, if you can change a Seattle Center, I mean, no offense, but that could be such a better space.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and,
totally.
And I've always been a fan of change comes within, and so if we go in there, and we're positioned right next to Vera Project, SIF, the Opera,
EMP,
all these nonprofit organizations and for profit that are artistically driven. Even the Chihuly Museum in there will add something to the center and get some decent restaurants in there. You got something going.
Oh,
right?
yeah,
change
totally.
That food court. And Last Sparrow in the world is right in our food court, by the way. So
actually,
go there while you can.
Still one in Silverdale.
Is there? Yeah. Oh, crap. So anyway, so this space we've been talking about, we are not entirely sure what it'll be yet.
Yeah.
And again, I've been in meetings with had one the other day. It was great with community leaders, awesome people. We've had them with musicians. What do you want? What would you like to see an in studio space look like? We have this talk of, and I'm almost positive this will happen, but creating a space, and it sounds maybe silly, but a space for bands to come in. I'm talking a shower, laundry. A green room just to chill.
That's really cool.
If you're on tour and you're, and especially Seattle, so you have to travel to get here. It's not like East Coast where you can hit a bunch of cities, and even there you need it, but you're traveling a lot. We always try to take as much care as we can to the artists, respect them, give them great sound, a great experience when they're there. There's only so much we can do with the space we have.
Yeah.
If we had
a
space where they can rest, shower, laundry. I mean, they love when we give them swag. You want to know why? It's not just they like KXP. It's clean shirts.
Clean shirts.
So they get to hang out, get online, you know, and just take care of them. And then the other ideas, these are just what we've thrown out. These aren't for sure or anything, but have a small recording space there. Mm. So you're on tour. You've been writing songs. You want to get something down. Maybe you can have the space to record. We could have some of that content or whatever. These are just ideas, but they all are where we're thinking.
That's pretty amazing.
What about listeners seeing these in studios each and every time? We do the VIP shows at the Triple Door, which are cool for members, but this could be open to the public. What about a space that you could come in, maybe a cafe possibly? Maybe you come in and you see live music, you see live DJing. While we do that, maybe Johnny Horn on Sundays is doing Preaching the Blues right there. You come in, hang out, listen to the music. Maybe Vandy's walking around and helping people, educate people about music. We have a whole educational component we want to bring into this as well.
Yeah.
Education for bands, education for music fans. We want to work with a school at the UW. We want to work with Vera and other schools, like kids and college age people coming in and learning about music at our station, hands-on as well. So we want to make this something, and as a Seattleite, we want to make it something you actually come down to Seattle Center and you want to come back to. It's not something you do
one
time.
And you're spending some time there.
You spend some time down there, and you actually have an experience. Like, you go back to Easy Street Records when you're in that area, right? Like,
you
go back. There's great records. There's great bands coming by. That is for Seattleites. But if you're visiting Seattle, I always tell people to go there as well. So it's something like that where you come in and you have a different experience each time. We're still trying to figure out how you can have even more impact, though, how you can leave a mark or how you can be involved with a little more hands-on.
Now is this a little bit ambitious though? I mean,
it's
you're totally ambitious. You're talking about a lot of stuff.
But you're
stuff
talking
here.
About a you're talking about a station that was 10 watts and
that's true.
Full of volunteers and what the hell they were doing. And now we're up here, right?
Right.
So a few things have to happen. Don't get me wrong. We have to raise a lot of money.
Yeah.
And
so the money's not there yet.
It's
we're
not.
Still, we're
we
still
are years away
the planning,
from this. So
planning stage.
It'll take
then,
2 years probably. Okay. So you got to raise the money, and we feel like we have some very generous donors in this city, and some very generous members here as well. There's grants. There's all kinds of different things we can do with the city. I know we want to work with them on building it, and there's. This is a capital campaign, and people do them. You know, and we can do it too. It will take a few years, and it'll take the commitment from our listeners. But I think what we want to create opens it up to not just listeners; it opens up to a whole new group of people and generous
people
as well.
Yeah.
So that'll be a few years of raising money, and while we do that, making our plans for the space, and it should, in theory, knock on wood, coincide, and we get in there by you know maybe the next 2 years. That's our goal.
That's, man, that's and that would be amazing. And just
and it could be in stages. It could be in steps.
Oh, yeah,
it won't all be there. Because you know, the other thing is you don't want to just jump into a space and be like, this is it. Okay.
Yeah.
We want to be very – we want to be able to change. We want to be able to move things around. What doesn't work, what does work, and be able to you know ebb and flow. But we are walking away. Kevin Cole and I are walking away from that, and we actually realize this is the most important work we've ever done. So this building and what we've done will actually trump everything else we've done. If we can make this happen, this will really, truly change the landscape of the city and maybe make radio even more relevant outside of Seattle and in Seattle even more than it is for us right now. We really feel it's a big deal. We really, you can probably, you know, from what I'm saying, understand that. But we feel it's very important.
Yeah. Well, I can tell that you guys are invested, you know, emotionally.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, on a you know, a job level, but emotionally into,
into
the station and the future of the station.
It's all intertwined in our lives.
There's
no getting out of it.
Yeah.
For
until
life.
You die.
For life.
Until you die.
That's right. Thanks, buddy.
So I wanted to kind of steer the conversation back to you just a little bit.
Okay.
Before we kind of wrap things up here.
Yep.
But you said something a little bit earlier about, you know, oh crap. Pickles. I just lost it. I just lost it.
Yeah, it happens.
What were we?
See,
were we
try live about? Radio when that
oh
happens.
My God.
It sucks.
No, I can, yeah. I don't think I can do that.
I just hit play. I always have something queued up. It's like, boom.
Well, see, that's the great thing about doing music, too. I mean, you can just be like, yeah, here it is, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I can't even remember the band name.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
There it goes. So earlier we were... So earlier we were talking about there was about... I'm going to cut all this out, but there was about 5 minutes there where I totally lost my train of thought. Earlier you touched on a little bit of, you know, once the station started taking off a little bit, ego came into play.
Yep.
Do you mind talking about that a little bit?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's got to, you know, being a radio DJ, people know you who you are. People
Absolutely.
Know your name. Like,
well, and
what happened there?
What people don't get either, unless they were born into it, you don't know that. You have no experience. Mm-hmm. It's like anything else experience for the first time. New parent. It's like, what the hell, man? I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
So... And you learn on the way. Like, so you start to go and people start to recognize you and you start to have this influence and you start to see like, wow, people know who you are, da, da, da. So, you know, it wasn't terrible. Like, you could way take advantage of that. It's easy to do. But what I realized was I was getting, not addicted to it, but I was getting used to it. And I was getting used to being recognized and things like that. And it started to feed, like, without that, I'm nothing. That kind of feeling.
Right.
Like, I really need that. I have a great story where I was at the, this is actually where it changed. You got to have these moments. I was at the, it wasn't Rebar.
Moment.
It was a Graceland at the time, or I don't know what it was. The Graceland space.
Right, right.
And,
El Corazon. Now.
Yeah. And, I was pretty drunk and I was with my friends, which is how I always start a sentence. I was at Graceland. I remember saying, like, and it was a night where it was a band I played a lot, so tons of people knew who I was and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't have any cash. I was just like, this is a terrible story. I've changed since then. But I just said, I'll get us free drinks. Don't worry. I'll just walk up to the bar. Somebody will get me a drink, I swear.
Yeah,
right? Because
yeah.
people buy you drinks and stuff, which is very cool. And now I recognize how awesome that is. But at the time, I was like, I was a total asshole. And so I'm walking to the thing, and a guy's like, hey, John. I'm like, hey, man, what's up? He's like, I got your beer. I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. So I walk up, just like clockwork. I'm like, yeah, I got my beer. And that's right. And he goes, yeah, man, I love your show. And he goes, hey, before you head back there, by the way, too, just want to warn you, man, hey, your fly's undone. And he walks off, and I look down, and I go, oh, man, oh, my God. And he walked off, right? And I thought, I am such an a-hole.
That's what did it for you?
That, right there.
Just that?
Yeah.
Having the fly down?
Yeah, I thought, you know, me walking up there and me getting beers, me being so important, I'm not more important than anybody in that room. I'm not more important than anyone
on this earth. You're a regular person that leaves their fly down.
Everybody does it, right? And I was in my environment, you know? That's the thing. It's one thing to be out in the street. It's like, you know, you get a certain percentage of people recognize you. But in the club or whatever, everybody, right? So then you're like, I'm just the jerk with this. And this is stupid. Like, why am I walking up there and being egotistical about this? So from that point on, and the difference is, you know, just the other day at a member event, I walked up and got a drink and somebody walked up. I'm just like, man, I'd love to buy you a drink. I'm like, no, dude, that's cool. I really appreciate that. He goes, no, you do a great job. Every morning I'm with you. Let me get you this. Cool. And we ended up sitting there and like, thanks, man. That's great. That's great. You know, it was very appreciative. Then we sat and I made sure I sat and talked with him. We talked for 10 or 15 minutes about the station and met his wife. And it's a completely healthy way to bond. Because, man, I buy drinks to people I like, you know, and this is someone who sets a table for you every day and you trust. And it's like, okay, that's the John Richards I want to be, not the jackass who's walking around. And it was very short-lived because it came very quick. It was suddenly I was being recognized, and then I realized, boy, that gets taken away as well, and it has its downsides. And it was like, I don't want that to be it defines me. And since then, I really struggle with it sometimes, but I shy away from a lot of that, and I actually get zero out of that part of it. I really like connecting with people, but it doesn't define me even a percentage.
So, how long did it take for you to get to that point, though? I mean,
it took a while. It took some troubling situations that happen when you're in the public eye, and that sort of brought me down to it kind of gave me another angle to this whole. It was really an arc. It really is funny. It's like out of a book where you get that taste and it gets bad, and then you start to recover from it, and then you start, and then I realized it quite a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, really truly like felt it, and then it hit me that I wanted to use any popularity or any kind of attention that I get and try to harness it for good. So start working with other nonprofits and start working with other organizations and start using my name if it meant anything to somebody, that I could put it next to things that I wanted people to support.
Right,
so I started switching that to and my son is 6 and a half, and it came to me about 5 or 6 years ago. So you can put the two together as well. It's another big lesson. And so I wanted him to be a guy who saw his dad's doing, you know, good work out, just not in his job, but using any kind of popularity he has. Because Seattle's a small city, really, and it especially in the music business, but especially in the recognition business. Mm-hmm. You have like your newscasters and your, you know, some sportscasters, and you have, but that's it. I mean, you don't have like this isn't a media town, really. It's not LA or New York or whatever, and there aren't many that are like that. So you don't have a lot of people that you actually recognize.
Yeah.
And I got very public out there. I did a TV show for a few years, and you know, just with social networking and everything else, like, you get people start to know who you are.
Right.
And so it started to blow up to a point where I was like, it freaked me out.
Yeah, and what was the point where it kind of got scary?
Well, it gets scary when people have too much of a connection with you.
Yeah.
And start to think you're talking to them, and start to think like you are their best friend, and you are actually, you're in their life. And it is absolutely terrifying, because it brings some of the people who are have some mental issues into the picture, or it brings people who are just too into it and don't have any personal space issues. It's sort of like when you walk up to someone who's pregnant, you know, you touch their belly. You would never walk up to somebody who wasn't pregnant and do that.
Right.
You sort of lose your ability to not know. That's just happened to me today, where I was having a conversation. It was just like personal space completely violated with me and my wife. Was like,
that was me, by the way.
I couldn't believe you did that. I was pissed. I was like, dude, I'm coming over. I swear to God. Just leave me alone. Jesus, man.
I got your 250 emails.
Yeah, here, geez. And so it ebbs and flows, and after a while you try not to resent it, because you want to hang with your kid, or you want to do this or that. And in most cases, people just want to be cool and thank you for music, or thank you for breaking a band, or tell you about a band.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're just like, dude, just want to chill here. Just want to have dinner, whatever. So you can get that.
And it seems like you walk a fine line with that too, because to be a good DJ, you have to connect with the people that are listening to your show. So there is some amount of stuff that you do say on the air, like personal stuff, and like on this show, you know, whole bunch of the first half was your personal life,
and
getting into music,
and
you want to share that stuff, because then, you know, that creates this bond between you and the listener, but
Right, and it...
You can go too far, right?
I think you can go too...
Is it you that goes too far, or is it... I mean, you know...
I've thought about that, and it's a fair question, and I thought about, like, there was no formula. Mm-hmm. Again, I didn't know what I was doing. I just got on the air, and what I thought was, you know, if you hand me a mixtape, if you hand me a tape or you hand me some music, I want to know who you are. Like, I need to know who you are before I put a tape in when I'm, you know, my brother sending me a tape, I'm going to listen to it. And I thought the same thing, like, well, if you don't know who this guy is on the air, how are you going to trust him to have your mornings with you and your music,
exactly.
right? And
yeah,
so I just started talking about stuff in my life. And you know what else? As much as I love music, I live this stuff. I don't want to just talk about music. I love talking about it, but man, I love talking about other things too.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's so much involved. Music is so important, but to get into every little detail about a song instead of what that song meant to you or that song was played at a point in my life, I'm more interested in that. I'm more interested in the impact of music.
Totally.
So I started talking about my life in that. It just became, and then it became silly because I was on the air so early, and it just became, I don't have anything else to talk about because my whole life is this show and my family.
I wake up at 4.
Right. And so those funny things started coming up, and then all of a sudden, you know, I had a child, right? Like, I started talking about, I got engaged, and then I got married and talked about on the air, and then I had a child, and that was a big deal. And because how am I not going to talk about this? I'm tired. We have a child. He didn't sleep. So I had to say, like, I suck right now, dude. I was up till 4 in the morning with this kid. And then it got, you know, then you go through bad things. My father passed. I went on the air hours later because I wasn't close to my dad, so it was a little easier to go on the air. But but then it became very tough. Like, I hosted Hot Oasis at the time, and I got on the air, and it was very cathartic, but always crazy. And that was something else. So I'm getting on there. That doesn't happen very often, I realized. I just didn't know people. That's the other thing. I didn't know people didn't do this. So I just got on the air and started talking about my dad dying.
Right.
And then played a whole set of local music around it. And it felt good, and people connected to it and could relate because everyone's lost somebody or knows somebody who's lost somebody. Then I went through this where it really clicked in, and really where I was no more holding back was Arlie being born, and started talking about it. I couldn't go back, and I didn't realize that would have consequences and that it would actually be somewhat frightening to put him out there. But it just didn't occur to me because I trusted people and I still do. But then my mom passed. Now, my mom passing was a different experience because she died over a long period of time, and she was my best friend. She lived in Spokane. I had to leave. And I had to talk about it. I didn't want to say I'm just leaving because it'd be like, what a jerk. You know, where did he go? So I was in Spokane, and I had an email playlist that I sent out to like 10,000 people or whatever. And I just one day sat in my sister's room, and I typed out what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And then I got 1,000 emails back and couldn't believe it. It was like, it really hit me how connected I am to my listeners. And I got on the air. I started playing songs. Like, I got a break. I came home, started playing these songs because we played music in the house a lot.
Right.
Because my mom was a huge music fan. So we'd play music, and I start telling stories, and they're pretty amazing stories when your mom's dying and you have months to know that and deal with it. And just crazy.
Yeah.
So, and I'm back in Spokane in my old house, which is, again, right out of a movie. Not a good movie. And then she passed. And then it became that really became when there's nothing else. I have to talk about this. So I talked about my mom dying, and I played a 4-hour show of music we listened to, or music about people losing. Yeah. And ever since then, I've done a show on November 13th or close to it. If it lands on the weekend, that's a show about loss, and it's the most responded to show every year. I mean, people email me. I got an email this week about it, asking me again when it is. And it became slowly me dealing with that passing, and I really struggled with it. New baby, you know, she passed 2 months after Arlie was born, so I had this new baby, and then it became a thing where I became more about the listener's loss. And now to this show, like when I do it this next November, even more so, it'll be about who they lost, and they'll write emails, and they'll cry, and they'll hear Hallelujah from Jeff Buckley, and they'll hear My Mom from Chocolate Genius, and they'll hear, you know, these songs are so depressing, but so uplifting at the same time. So it's this connection that now we're invested, right? We're talking about dead parents, we're talking about loss, and that's when I realized, like, there's no going back. I mean, I don't have any choice here. They know way too much about me.
Yeah,
and I went through a divorce a few years later while I was spending a lot of time in New York. And that is the first time I held back and couldn't actually talk about it. I did it through my music, and
because there was legal ramifications for something.
There
or
could
you
be.
Just wanted to keep...
I guess there could have been. I thought about that a little, but I think a lot of it was just respect for my ex. Just respect for the situation. How do I put that the best way? Respect for the situation.
Did.
I'll leave it at that with a little laugh and move on. But it it was a wrong thing to do,
right?
To do anything about that. So I had a struggle, and you know what? It felt wrong. It felt very wrong. I felt like I was betraying my listeners because I felt like I wasn't informing them what's going on and why I'm playing this music right now. Because I can't lie. I can't suddenly start playing like happy-go-lucky music when my life is falling apart around me.
Well, and then come back on air with your sullen. And,
yeah, exactly. You know, so I started to talk about it near the end took a while to get back here. And then I talk a little bit more about it. But that was the first time I held back, which is good.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think funny, the right time to hold back.
And it's funny to hear you say all this because I've been listening to, like I said before, I've been listening to your show for quite a while now. And, I'm recognizing all this stuff.
Right. See?
You know,
yeah,
hearing this stuff because I feel like you do have a good connection with your listeners. It's just interesting. A person in your caliber, I guess, of radio, like to find out, you know, what you feel about that, because there are a lot of people that probably feel more connected to you than you do to them.
One thing I learned a while ago is when you meet people, I have to say, what's your name? And I realized I wasn't doing that. And what hit me was they all know me. They all know my name. They just assume I know them. Not that everyone does it. It's not a psychological thing.
Facial recognition. Not or anything at all.
They're
like
just
that.
Like, hey,
just
John.
On this certain level. That,
right. And that, I'm like, and who are you? And they're like, oh. And you realize that you have that. You have that connection to thousands, and they have a chance. Like my brother even says, like, dude. Yeah, like I haven't talked to you in a month, man. He goes, I listen to you every day. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Your brother's like, I don't need to talk to you.
You don't have a radio show, Eric. You can talk to me. So it's even on my family level, it becomes that a little bit.
Right.
And it is an interesting thing. It is, and people have like when I had Arlie start talking about kids, it's like all these parents came out of the woodwork.
Oh, it's okay
to listen to good music. There's a parent, and it was amazing. It was we've never seen anything like it. It became suddenly. All these young parents and all these, not just young parents, but parents in general suddenly felt like, oh, okay, well, we're cool here.
This
guy's actually talking about it. And he seems all right.
Yeah.
You know, they don't realize what a dork I am, but they think I'm cool or whatever. And they're like,
he had poop on his hands at 2 o'clock in the morning too.
I can relate to that. He used to go out. I used to go out. He used to have a life. I used to have a life.
Yeah. Now we have this connection. Yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Yeah.
So one last question for you, John, before we go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a totally loaded question, my friend.
All right.
Do you deal with many bands that you just can't stand? Like people, like we were talking about earlier with the ego.
Right.
Because doing this show, having some live bands on and stuff in the past, we've dealt with it a couple times here in Dining Room Studios.
Right.
You know? And it just is the craziest thing to me. And I've been very curious, and this is one of the questions that I wanted to ask you since we lined this thing up, is that you guys deal with bands on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's got to be some people out there that you're just, you know, you don't have to say names or anything, but, you know, just experiences, I guess.
Well, you know, we have about total like 400 in studios a year.
Uh-huh.
And 1 sec, buddy. 400 in studios a year. It's like dealing with children, really.
Yeah,
400 a year, and then like just the connection with bands sending stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So the bands who come in almost universally are cool to work with.
Right.
It really is. I'm not kidding. It's for the most part. There's been a couple of egos that have come in, and we have such good people working for us that when we see they're affected by it, we know there's something wrong with them.
So no full jars of like just green M&Ms or anything like that?
No. I mean, we've had writers before for remotes that are comical. Uh-huh. Iggy Pop's a good one. But he just laughed it off. He was like, don't worry about it, right? And we've dealt with like managers, like PJ Harvey's manager was very serious. Very serious.
Yeah. People are much harder to work with than the people themselves.
To appear they're doing their job in some cases.
Right.
And in other cases, they really are taking care of the dirty work. And a lot of the people they have to work with, they have to be mean to.
Right.
What happens is you run into a nice organization like ourselves, and we're like, we're not used to it, and they aren't used to people being nice. And so there's a bit of a transitional period. Yeah. But we always kill them with kindness. It always works.
Yeah.
Because people don't believe we're for real a lot of the time. So they're like, you're not that. I was like, well, we actually are. If you were to hang out... Someone should hang out with that station. I'm telling you, it is the greatest documentary ever. But you hang out with that station for a few days, and it's a really good group of people, right?
Uh-huh,
so people have trouble coming to terms with who we actually are.
Yeah.
Local bands are super appreciative of the airplay, which is awesome.
Yeah,
and I think
time,
they're just really happy. They get a great experience. They get play. So they're usually pretty cool. It's bands who don't get airplay. Those are the ones you can deal with. And I've had from a certain band got 4 or 5 pages of press complaining that, I guess you'd call it press, article about not getting airplay on the station, and that we were whatever, Nazis
elitists
or whatever.
Whatever.
Like, we control, we only play 20-year-olds in Brooklyn tight jeans. I was just like, kind of freaked me out, kind of gross, actually, because I don't actually check the tightness of the jeans or the age before I play it.
Right,
but
right.
We truly play what we think we should be played. And when there's 40, 45 DJs and none of them are playing it, okay, well, the bar has to be somewhere. You have to, just like a news organization, if you're looking at like the NPR station, they can't run a story about something that happened at, you know, my kid's cafeteria, even though that's news.
There's
a bar, there's a certain level you have to actually put it at, and you're not helping the bands if you're playing badly produced music or something that's just not up to quality yet. Hopefully it causes them to get better production or better songs or whatever. But you will run into that, like just anger, or that we're elitist or we suck or we, and there's no kind of connection to the fact that there's a lot of other stations who aren't even considering playing you,
or I mean,
will ever even listen to your demo.
Right, right.
So, and
or
we,
I mean, you guys have got to be getting like thousands of these things a week.
It's a week, yeah, a week, a week, totally, you know. Absolutely. And we listen to everything. Absolutely, everything gets listened to at the station.
Wow.
Yeah, we all, the DJs listen to it. Our music director, his entire job is listen to music, and then you have each DJ checking it out, and everything that comes through my, I listen to it, or I have people help me out listen to it, just to, hey, is this something I should check out or not?
Yeah,
I mean,
at
that point, that's just to be polite, because I don't want things, otherwise I wouldn't hear them.
Yeah,
so I'll have like, check out that demo, and so you'll hear it, and you'll, you know, then get to hear it. But yeah, I think for the most part, we don't deal with a lot of difficult bands. We actually don't. The bands we're playing are really appreciative. The bands we don't play, for the most part, get it, but and keep trying. But I think if anyone's going to be hard to deal with, it's the people we actually don't play. They're going to be upset. And you know what? How can you blame them? They want to get airplay.
Yeah.
We are in the city, and we're the most, you know, one of the most influential stations in the world, and you have a chance to get play, and then you don't. And it's got to be a bummer. It's always a bummer. You hear that all the DJs pass on it or something, and it bums you out. And I bummed out for those bands, because nobody's a bigger fan of a band than the people in the band. Always remember that, you'll always be able to deal with them, because they rightfully so should believe in their music more than anybody else in this earth. And if they don't and they shouldn't be in the band, but you're dealing with people who truly believe in it, so there's sometimes not as much perspective, and you get anyone criticizing it or not playing it as a form of criticism, because we're never negative. That's saying back to the drawing board, and it's a bummer,
but it is
a necessary evil of what we do. We have to be a bar. We have to actually be. But when you do get play, it's a big deal.
Oh, it's huge.
It's huge
for people.
Yeah. You're getting played next to Radiohead. You're getting played next to, because we don't just play those bands. We play bigger bands.
Well, and you're getting heard throughout the world.
Yeah,
well.
And people, and it doesn't matter if you're Seattle or anywhere else. We'll listen to your demo if you send it in to us, and you know that's
awesome.
That is our, we have to do that. And same with listeners. We get back to every listener that writes us.
Right.
It may take weeks, but we do it. I had that commitment years ago when we just started using email. Like, what a stupid thing I just decided. Because, man, it is hard to keep up. But you have to. I got emails today, two different people had babies and wanted to hear a song.
Uh-huh.
A third had a baby and was in a maternity suite listening and wanted to hear a song. And
that's where we were at. I think I emailed Cheryl because you were, she was supposed to be on, you were on.
Yeah.
And
congratulations.
We got some Constantines.
Yeah.
I think is what I,
absolutely.
Soon Enough.
A great song. It's one of my favorite songs, actually.
Awesome.
I heard that song for the first time on the station when I was running around Green Lake. And it was one of those songs where I was just like, the best running stride ever.
Oh,
like,
man.
God, I was listening to it, like,
such a
just
great
building.
Song.
Yeah. And, it's beautiful. I love those guys.
I teared up when you played it, too.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Like,
I'm glad I played it.
Phew, I got a daughter.
And then when you're pissed at her in a few years and you write me.
Right.
Like, dude, can you play a song? My kid hates me.
Could you play some Pantera, please? Yeah. Anyway, hey, John, it's been an absolute pleasure having you.
It was great being here.
Thank you so much. Arlie, thanks for coming and playing iPad.
Yeah.
During the show.
He's learned all his ninja skills.
He's smiling.
See, that's like $20 in babysitting right there. That was, that's already going
towards
it. That's
amazing, man. Yeah, that thing is paid off already. Totally. So, John, you said let's do a couple plugs here.
Yeah.
For KXP, KXP.org.
You can go to KXP.org. You can listen live from 6 to 10 every Pacific time, every weekday morning. But the archive is huge.
Yeah,
a lot of people use
it
on demand. 2 weeks of morning shows and every other show we do there is available. And then we have our own podcasting, which is doing very well. Songs of the Day, which I helped pick out.
Yeah, right.
Which are cool. And then the Music It Matters podcast, which is just basically an hour of what we do on the air.
Yeah.
But what we can give you that. I just did one where I just decided not to talk last time. I thought that was it's like, it was a good mix. They didn't need to hear my stupid voice. So
you were tired. You woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right. I rattled off every band name in like 20 seconds, like, have a good day. And so there's that available. And there's lots coming down the line as well for people to listen. You can have the iPhone app. You can listen live. We have people plugging into their cars during the commute.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Fries my
brain. You've got another show idea, another podcast idea that's coming up. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
I like talking, as you can tell, I love what you're doing, and it's sort of the same kind of deal. I don't know. I don't want to compete with you, man.
Will you please?
You would have to be on mine now. You have to promise you'd be on mine to get this going. So we do music, but we also have a lot of talking. You know, it occurred to me when we had John Darnielle in of the Mountain Goats, John Roderick came in, Frank Black came in, and they talked a lot on the air, but it was actually as, if not better, than the music even. I mean, it was so fascinating.
But we
can't do that. People tune in for music, and we have to have a limit. So if you can choose something you want to hear, and I love talk radio. I love hearing, you know, different opinions and voices and political views or whatever. And I'm a KXP fan, but I also don't want to hear a ton of talk. But I would specifically go to it if it was available. So my idea is to bring people together in the community, funny people, informative people, whatever, and host something. And if you ever heard the pledge drives that we do, that's where it hit me too, where I was like, Cheryl and I are pretty good on the air together.
We're
like an old married couple. And so she'd be in there, and we just sort of, there's just some good personalities there that get lost in the music, and that's fine, but there needs to be an outlet. Yeah. And I think people would respond to it because we could talk about some stuff people might actually
I think it's a great idea, and you guys have just a treasure trove of all sorts of interesting people that you guys can get on that show,
Totally.
You know, absolutely. So, that's awesome. I think it's an awesome idea.
That's good to hear.
Just don't step on my toes.
I will need advice. I'm not kidding on that. That is kind of new for me, and I'm used to knowing what I'm doing.
Actually, I was just, as we end this show, I was probably going to ask you for advice, so I don't know. I don't know if I'm prepared for that.
All right.
But thank you again so much for coming on the show. I had a great time talking with you. You can find our show, air-raid.net, on the web. Stream our shows, our whole archive of 50 episodes. Can you believe it? 2 episodes away from our one-year anniversary. We've made it.
Congrats.
We've made it. We're still not getting paid, but we've made it. Okay? You can find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Zune Marketplace, and everywhere else. Oh, and check out the new Noisebeam Network from our good friends at Fisher Communications. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great week. We're going to go out today with Grand Archives. This song is called Villains, off of this free EP demo that you can find at their website, grandarchives.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
To deserve this. Same.